Mine was, I always joke and say that me and the draft board decided.
We are going to open the call to order, the meeting of the Senate Committee on Education. Today is May 14th, 2015. We're going to open a couple bills because we have at least one sponsor of both. So to begin with, we're going to open public hearings on 2927A and also on House Bill 2661. And with that, we'll have a short explanation. We'll call our two representatives to come on up.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2927A increases the amount transferred yearly from the state school fund to the high-cost disabilities account. House Bill 2661 provides that school drills and instruction on safety threats include lockdown procedures.
And it appears your senator is not here yet, because I think Kelsey's on that bill with you as well.
Lost so him again, huh?
We will start with Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate bringing in front of the Senate Education Committee today to talk about a bill that I have a great deal of support for. On the House side, we had real good discussions over there on House Bill 2927. And my name is Susan McLean, and I am a state representative from District 29, and that includes West Hillsboro and Cornelius and Forest Grove. The high-cost disability account was established, as many of you who were here know, in about 2003. And it is a grant program, and it is designed to actually reimburse a school district who has a residential pupil with a disability. And those eligible costs for that school district of providing special education-related services is over $30,000. The legislature appropriates funds each biennium, and if the funds are lower than the actual claims, the amount reimbursed is prorated. Briefly, House Bill 2927 would nearly double the amount of money appropriated to the high-cost disability account from $18 million to $35 million each fiscal year for the next biennium. This concept was not an original one of mine. It came directly from the task force on school funding that met during the interim, which resulted in House Bill 2506 in the 2013 session. The account has been held steady at $18 million since 2007-2008 school year, where the claims against that grant have climbed much higher than the allotment to over $44 million in 2012-2013. This was a result in a rate of reimbursement at about 40% to the districts. Doubling this money will appropriate to the account and increase the reimbursement rate to about 80%. I want to share a case study from my district. In the year 2012-2013, the Forest Grove School District had over $3.6 million in eligible claims against the grant program. Due to the reimbursement rate at 40%, the shortfall in funding for that school year was nearly $2 million. As a result, the Forest Grove School District had one of the highest amounts of claim against the grant per eligible student. And as you can see, when you have to provide those services, you want to provide the services, it's appropriate, and it's the responsible thing to provide those services. You're going to do it, and you're going to have to take that $2 million out of regular classrooms to apply it to these special services that are needed, that are mandated, and are the right thing to do. So we had good support on the House side. We're sending it over here because we've had school districts and superintendents and principals really support it and feel like this is one good way of helping and supporting our school systems in the state of Oregon again in the next biennium.
Did you want to talk on this particular bill as well?
Well,
I saw your name there.
Given the opportunity, yes. For the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I serve House District 22, North Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn. And I was part of the task force that looked at this issue, and we did a lot of study on it. And what we were, the initial goal of having the school funding task force was focused on equity for our schools. And this, it was very clear that some schools were not able to, well, they were paying the full cost for that should have come out of other districts and should have been a shared cost on students. Part of what this bill will also do is really track when students move from one district to another, so that again, the funding will follow the student and not be not being misplaced in one district or another. So I would highly support the adoption of this bill.
Senator Gelser, I saw your name on this bill. Is there anything you wish to add?
It's a good bill. I hope we pass it.
The $35 million is coming from where?
The $35 million would be coming is coming from the same place that the original money came from, which is, of course, the general fund.
Okay. So we just add more general fund money in to cover this particular thing. We're not taking it away from the rest of the education system, as it kind of is done now, but in a different way.
Right. And there's no general fund allocation. It doesn't change the total.
And it didn't go to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, the reason why is it doesn't change the total amount that's allocated to the state school fund. There's no general fund appropriation, so generally in the past, the state school fund, like formula related bills, have run through revenue.
Yep. So it doesn't actually take more out of the school. It just uses the school fund and allocates a part of that more
to
this.
Top,
yeah, it comes off the top of the. It comes off the top.
For the distribution.
Yeah. For the distribution. Okay. Very good. Would you like to now go to 262661?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Roblin and committee. It is my pleasure and honor to bring an issue that is important. It is life and death. We have heard tremendous testimony today about our public service officers, our police, and our veterans, and yet there's a group of people that really aren't acknowledged in heroic measures, but they exist in our schools. Our teachers, our staff members, they are heroes in time of crisis, and they save a tremendous amount of lives. And in the past, we passed a bill that was in support of having safety drills for lockdown purposes if there's somebody with a weapon or is indeed a real issue that can't be controlled by just a school staff. We currently do not require lockdown drills. What was found in the past year of some research was the fact that many high schools were not practicing this. Elementary and middle schools, they had it down. But where many of these incidents do happen at a high school level, they had not practiced this. So this bill is to require that schools do this in their safety drills, just like tsunami or fire. And so the one thing that has been added to this bill, which I totally support, is there was a group of emergency responders that got together and said, well, we need to make sure if somebody's calling in, we're all sharing the same, we all have the definition for the same terminology. And so there is a little bit of an amendment that it is using the same terminology, whether you're calling fire, police, or ambulance, so that we have that consistency now throughout the bill. And I appreciate your support, and I'm definitely here to answer any questions.
Yes. Senator Bercher.
Thank you, Chair Rudy. Do you know what drills are required currently? And I know when I went to school, we had fire, earthquake, and air raid.
Yes, I remember those too. Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't know what we have now.
What we have now is required fire drills once a month. We have to do earthquake drills twice a year. And now any of these drills can be combined with each other so that you're saving less time that you're losing out of the classroom. And the lockdown drills would be, I can't remember how we put that statutorily. I think it falls in it falls under the same thing as we do with I must ate too much for lunch. My brain stopped. But it's twice a year.
Yeah.
It's twice a year. Yep. Yes.
Thank you, Chairman.
And just on that, I think a lot of us, when we did them, we would do a fire drill and an earthquake drill at the same time. And now
always.
You can do, because you're doing a lot more fire drills. And then you can do a fire drill and a lockdown drill. There's ways to put them together. To make less. Yes, Senator Gelser.
We did nuclear drills.
Yeah, we did.
In the early 80s.
Yeah, you climb under your desk and
yeah,
you're
if
safe.
You put your head like this, the radiation will
right.
not get you.
Yes, many of us. One more comment, Chair Roblin. Mr. Chair.
Pardon?
Can I make one other comment?
Yes.
The other thing that's important is that we didn't state this in the legislation, but that you do a lockdown drill or a fire drill. We at the high school level got used to fire drills just going real smoothly, but we did a lockdown drill where we set up the scenario where students had to exit the building. They had to go out to the softball field and find a secure place. Absolute chaos when we did a fire drill during an assembly. There are definitely times that you don't think about that all these things can happen. And the other one that used to happen when our building was under construction was fire drills that just happened quite frequently, sometimes two or three times a day, because if welders were doing things in the building. And we had the most complaints from students when there was the fire alarm went off and it was in the middle of lunch period. But from every one of those examples, we learned something from it. So it's good to you play with different scenarios as they move through this process.
And yes, Senator Cruz. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. It appears to me that the twos are incorporated in the fours, and the you're fine with, which I am too, with
yes.
allowing a school board to deal with their planning in executive sessions. So
yes.
That makes total sense. And you're fine with that.
I'm fine with that, Chair Roblin and members. I prefer that schools do all these things in open sessions so that your community can be engaged. But I have heard of several of examples where there needs to be a real blunt conversation about certain situations, and that should be done in executive session.
Follow up, I would suggest that virtually all issues that are dealt with in executive sessions eventually see the light of day once they have come to resolution or come to a conclusion. So I would assume the same here. There may be some sensitive things they need to consider, but once the plan's there, it's got to be public. So
thank you. Yes, I agree with your clarification on that.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I wanted to say that last year where I taught it in the Hillsborough School District, we do these types of drills, and we had our two for the year, and within a week and a half after our second drill, we had to actually go into it and actually do a real lockdown. And the kids were absolutely fabulous, but we really felt that we learned so much in those mm-hmm. two practices that one of the reasons that we had a good result and also really a pretty easy time of it was that the kids were prepared. So I really support this as well, and I think it's practical, and I think that the teachers really appreciate it.
I agree. So the only thing I would say is, as a patrol boy, they gave me a lot of tasks that got me out of the classrooms because I was this dyslexic, hyperactive person, so walking to the crosswalk.
Yeah.
So for the nuclear blast one, they would always do that. And I went and told the principal finally. It took me a while. I said, if this is the real thing, I'm not bringing the flag back. I'm going home after I let everybody cross the way.
Well,
I thought that was pretty good.
Exactly.
Took me a while. I think they wanted me to be there longer. But
yeah. I, too, was the one that cleaned the erasers every day for some reason.
I did that, too. I was really good. So with that, any further questions by any of our people? Thank you very much
Thank
for bringing
you. Thank you for your time.
Senator Knope, do you want to talk about the amendment that includes what you have put together on four? Okay.
I'm good. Everybody else is.
I am. I think for those people, we haven't had a conversation about the dash fours, but they include a portion that allows for the conversations about safety issues to happen in executive session. And the reason that I think that's really, like, we used to have active shooter drills at our school, and the police would come in and put together a plan and let you know where they were going to put people because they figured it all out. Not good information necessarily for the person who might be perpetrating it to have. So I was really happy yeah. that the amendment was put in to have conversations. You know, you'll know that you're going to do those drills, but you don't need to know the particulars behind it. The school personnel do need to know that kind of stuff. So I think that was an important addition to this bill. So with that, we'll go back to 2927 and Christine Reel. Oh, Reeland and Eric Bratt. Come on up. Oh, it's both Reeland. There's an and. I got it now. It took me a moment.
Dear Chair Roblin and committee members, thank you for letting us speak. It may seem strange that a parent is up here talking about this bill, but I can tell you I have a particular reason, not just in our particular case, but on behalf of the many other parents who have children with high-cost disabilities. My name is Christy Reel. This is my husband, Eric, and we're a parent of a 17-year-old daughter who has a diagnosis of autism, intellectual disability, and a rare phenotype of severe self-injury. I also have a 13-year-old son identified as talented and gifted. My daughter has been admitted twice to the inpatient neurobehavioral unit at Kennedy Krieger Johns Hopkins for treatment of her severe self-injury. She's still in the hospital after 7 months because of the highly successful medical and behavior treatment that's available to her there is not available in Oregon. But like I said, I'm here to advocate not just for my daughter, but for the many other students in Oregon who have high-cost disabilities and can benefit from the proposed increase to the High-Cost Disabilities Fund as part of this bill. I've been told by a special district special education administrator that there is currently no incentive for school districts to work cooperatively with parents on behalf of students who have high-cost disabilities. This is purely because school districts know that they will take a financial hit by accommodating some of the costly needs of these students. This makes for expensive legal fees for school districts. I think it would be telling to know what school districts spend on legal costs related to special education students. The end result is that the vast majority of parents, foster parents, and guardians are overwhelmed with the conflict and expense involved in getting their children what they need, and often give up because they cannot afford an attorney to help them. Yes, Disability Rights Oregon has free legal help available, and they do a fantastic job with the resources that they have, but they don't have the staff or resources to even begin to help all those in need. And many parents, guardians, children who don't have guardians are so overwhelmed they don't even know or have the time to seek help. These vulnerable children are the ones to suffer from this highly contentious process. I implore you to move toward a process that moves away from litigation by starting with increasing money allocated to the High-Cost Disabilities Fund. Ironically, it is actually the most vulnerable of children who have disabilities that are most affected by the current legal and financial structure in Oregon, even with the increase to the High-Cost Disability Funds. Children like my daughter, unless they are in a pediatric nursing facility, represent some of the highest cost to individual school districts. Without some kind of legislative change that addresses the needs of students who represent significantly higher costs than the $30,000 per year to school district, there is even higher financial motivation for school districts to litigate these cases. I want to make it clear that I don't see school districts as the big bad bullies, but they simply have to look at the bottom line. And so, for instances like our daughter's, the bottom line is it's going to be too much of a hit to the district, even with the High-Cost Disabilities Fund. In our case, we've done months of work trying to incentivize cooperation with both the Oregon Department of Education and local school district by bringing shared funding to the table to reduce the cost of providing the necessary resources to allow our daughter to access her right to education, all to no avail. Not only has there been no real action to cooperate, but our openness with our daughter's situation resulted in our local school district refusing to even enroll our daughter, despite a clear Oregon revised statute requiring them to do so. This means that they are paying an attorney to fight our case, $400 an hour, and we will have to do the same. In closing, please consider the multiple benefits of increasing the high-cost disability funds via HB 2927. Not only will it help school district budgets through more reimbursement for students with high-cost disabilities, but it will also hopefully decrease the district's legal costs associated with the financial motivation to immediately move to involve attorneys in cases for some of our most vulnerable children in Oregon. Perhaps, more importantly, it will hopefully help families be able to focus on the many other needs of their highly vulnerable children. Also, of course, I would hope that action would be taken in this legislative session to further incentivize school districts to work cooperatively to meet the needs of students with particularly high-cost disabilities due to unique medical and behavioral challenges. After all, research shows that a strong early investment in students with disabilities means that they can develop skills that will result in more independence and therefore less cost to the state over the rest of their adult lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Real, for coming. Is it okay if I ask a question about the situation that you're, I don't want to
sure.
violate your confidentiality.
No, that's fine.
Is that all right? All right. So if I understand the situation correctly, your daughter has some medical needs
yes.
that require placement in a medical facility. And the mm-hmm. problem that you're having is accessing her right to a free and appropriate public education because everybody claims that she's not a resident of their district.
Correct.
Would that be the accurate?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I remember last year, Mr. Chair, or I guess 2 years ago, we were working on an issue with the Providence Child Center and Portland Public Schools. And the argument was that the students weren't residents of the Portland Public School District because a child's residency is determined by where their parent or guardian lives, not by where the child lives.
Right.
So under that same standard, why isn't your child considered, if you live in the Salem-Keizer mm-hmm. District, under the same argument that those kids weren't, and we needed legislation to make them mm-hmm. covered, why wouldn't your child be a resident of Salem-Keizer School District?
Well, that's the question. That's why I think the statute is clear. But again, the school district, the incentive is to fight this case as hard as they can because it represents a high cost. So they're using reasons like they consider it a unilateral parent placement as if they should have had part in the decision.
Kind of like if your child had been
right.
in a car accident and was taken to an
right.
emergency room, you don't call the school district first.
Right.
So, Mr. Chair,
I only
state that to put on the record that by the same logic that we worked with
right.
The Department of Ed and Portland Public Schools last year around residency, I don't understand why Salem-Keizer would not comply with their federal obligation to enroll a student who, under our statute, is a resident of their district.
I would entirely agree. Their child happens to be out of state, which is another little issue in this whole thing, but I agree with you completely. I have rarely told parents that the only recourse I see is to file a complaint, there are a few cases when that's what I've had to say, because until the department gets the complaint and does something, it's really difficult to get that sorted out. But I agree with you. My reading of the case is that the parents live here in Salem. It is a Salem resident and so on. But we'll find out, I think.
Right.
I hope.
And I think just that other piece that I wanted on the record, when a kid has a medical need, if
yeah.
they have cancer and they
exactly.
go to Portland, if they need a heart transplant and they go to Scripps, those are not school placements. Those are medical placements.
Yep.
But you still need education services.
Absolutely. In fact, in many cases, while you're in that transition, the medical stuff is done, they aren't going to transport you, but they are ready for educational services. So we need to make sure that happens. And having had a number of students in the time I was in high school who ended up with cancer and ended up at OHSU, our district always recognized that was our responsibility, even though they got there without having the IEP first, because there was no reason to have. I mean, we hadn't come to that point.
And so hopefully Salem-Keizer will hear about this hearing and learn that there are legislators that are standing behind the rules and hope that they follow through with their federal obligation to serve a student that is a resident of their district, and that declining enrollment to a child based on their disability would seem to be a violation of federal law and civil rights.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Chair Roblin and Senator Kelso.
And thank you for coming on this one, because I do believe originally when they set up the high needs cost, there was the assumption that would pay about almost 100% of the additional costs above 30. Mm-hmm. The fact is we've identified more, the costs are going up, and now it's down to 40%, which is really, it has made a different burden on these schools that have mm-hmm. a number of these kids. So I appreciate you coming here to talk about this one, too.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. I think that was everybody who was signed up. If there's anyone else out there who wants to come and speak, especially those people on the back wall who are sitting under the camera and haven't had a chance to be on camera yet, you can come up now. No? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on 2927. We're going to continue on 2661. Do we have any more? And there were no one else to speak on that, so again, I will offer again, if there's anyone who wants to speak to 2661, now is your time. Same group, not wanting to. Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on 2661. And we'll move to a public hearing on 2404A, and we'll open that hearing, and we'll have a short explanation. And it looks like, Heidi, do you want to come on up, DeBuy?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2404A adjusts the school food and beverage nutritional standards to comply with federal nutritional standards. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral. We are considering the -3 amendments at this time. The bill has a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact.
So we're going to hear about the -3 amendments as well as the bill.
We are.
And obviously, they decided it got through too easily in the House, and they want to make sure there was something else to look at. So go right ahead.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I'm Heidi Dupuy. I am the manager of the School Nutrition Programs in the Department of Education. As you know, the Department of Education manages the National School Lunch and School Breakfast Programs for the state, and the state follows those federal requirements for nutrition standards and menu planning. In 2007, the legislature passed nutrition standards for foods sold outside of the National School Lunch and School Breakfast Program, and then in 2010, the federal government gave USDA authority to establish standards for those same types of foods, and so we ended up with two competing laws, and House Bill 2404 is intended to align the Oregon nutrition standards with the federal smart snack standards. And that's happening in the areas of beverages that can be sold to students based on grade level, and prohibits the selling of caffeinated beverages for elementary and middle schoolers. It clarifies the ability of National School Lunch operators to be able to sell lunch and breakfast items that met the meal pattern requirements on the same day and the day after as a la carte items. And then it includes nut butters, seeds, and seed butters as exempt from the saturated fat requirement. The -3 amendments specify that these rules would apply to foods sold to students. The current law has the nutrition standards apply to the entire school property with no designation for whether it's adults or students. Just everyone in the school would need to would have foods available to them that met these standards. And with the -3, they would limit those to students. And that particularly impacts elementary settings where teachers would not be able to purchase coffee under the current standards. But by adding students, then the standards only apply to students. So yeah. We are neutral on the -3 amendments.
We had a few years ago, we had a problem with some nutritional standards and faculty rooms, and it created a little bit of a buzz before. So I think this is a wise choice.
Yeah.
You can also have larger sized deals if it's only sold there. So there's a bunch of things that I think make it appropriate for teachers to have a slightly different standard. So because you're here, and because I've always wanted to ask if it was really true.
Yes.
There's always myth as I was going through the system that there was a time, I think it was in the presidency of Ronald Reagan, when ketchup became a vegetable. And I just want to know if that was actually a true statement or if that was just
No, that was a buzz statement for ketchup being a vegetable.
Okay,
yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that so I won't necessarily use it in appropriate future. any questions for this witness? Seeing none, we'll say thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
And is there, yes. Heidi?
Yes.
Oh, that's the only person that's up here. The only one. Sorry, Heidi. You want to say it again? You can, because I had you in two different places.
Okay.
But it's okay. We will close our hearing on House Bill 2404A. I guess there is a quorum still, so we could move on to the other bills. They're just work sessions. We want to go check to see where it passes. So we're going to take just a short intermission as we get ready. So.
Today I was really excited. I didn't have to hear that
alone. So we're back in order. And no problem. Senator Knoop.
Did we open a work session?
And we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill. Thank you. On House Bill 2670A, suggestion of Senator Knoop. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. I move House Bill 2670A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knoop moves House Bill 2670A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, Representative Beyer is excused. And it passes, and we close the work session. And the carrier, who would like to carry this bill? Anyone in particular?
I think since Senator Beyer is not here, he
Senator
should
Beyer,
carry
that'd
it.
Be good. Okay. I'll have to give him some reason for being not here. Okay. So we will close that work session, open a work session on. Open work session on, where is it down there, 2847A, mm-hmm. House Bill. Senator Knoop.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -4 amendments as presented.
Senator Knoop moves the -4 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Any opposition to this bill? Seeing none. It's passed. Who wants to carry this bill? Anybody?
Well, we just adopted the amendments.
About amendment, thank you.
All
keep
right.
going.
And we should probably excuse. We should probably excuse Beyer on that.
And we'll excuse Beyer on that vote if we need to excuse him on that amendment vote.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 2847A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knoop moves House Bill 2847A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. This time, Beyer is excused, and with that, we will. It has passed. Carrier? Anybody wish
to carry it?
Senator Hess. With that, we will.
Take the easy ones, man.
That's what's been planned.
That's a good bill.
It is a good bill. that will close our work session on 2847. And we will open a work session on House Bill 2973A. Okay.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 2973A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thanks for not having an amendment. Makes it easier for me.
Senator
Knoop moves House Bill 2973A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. Senator Beyer absent, excused. The bill passes. Anybody that would like to carry it? Senator Knoop.
Great.
Is that the last one? Or do we have one more?
One more.
Did we close that one? Yes. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3045. Senator Knoop.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 3045 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knoop moves House Bill 3045 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition?
Was there any amendments with this? Are they already, did we already move the amendments?
We did not.
We're not going to move them, okay.
Yeah, we're going to leave it exactly as it is. We had a lot of conversations about it. We had them introduced, but at the end of the day, we decided not to.
So okay.
Any conversation, discussion, any opposition? Seeing none, Senator Beyer is absent. Absent, excused. Yes. And,
you could say he was AWOL.
That's right, exactly. So the bill passes. I'll carry this one. Is there any, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 3045.
I'm very happy.
Is there any other discussion to come before the committee? Anybody have any?
Mr. Chair, I thought for the record, because we are still on the record, I want to congratulate you or compliment you on the work group you put together dealing with OEIB and the product that we will soon be coming out with. I think it's been a great work group, and I think we have a good product, and I just wanted to compliment you for your leadership.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that you were there for every meeting, even though you had to give up some other things.
And I also want to thank Senator Gelser for allowing me to play hooky from time to time. So
every Monday.
Yes, every Monday.
Tuesday, whatever day.
So with that, our committee is adjourned for today. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Adjourned for today.